Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Friday, January 19, 2018. You can listen to the AFC and NFC Championship games on Sunday right here on your radio home of the NFL playoffs in Kansas City, Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're going to talk about those games up next with Robert Mays from The Ringer. You could follow him on Twitter, Robert Mays is his handle, and of all the games to actually attend and to be covering, can you imagine what it would have been like to be in Minnesota for the Minneapolis Miracle?
Oh, man.
And to actually cover that game and to write about it and be part of the atmosphere and to be in that city when that happened. Well, Robert Mays was there and wrote about it, and so we're going to talk to him coming up right now and get his thoughts on what that was like, and also preview the game between Jacksonville and New England, and then Minnesota and Philly, where he's following the Minnesota Vikings after watching them last week. Let's say hello to Robert Mays. Robert, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing fantastic, man. I'm going to tell you what, I'm jealous. I've been lucky enough to go to a bunch of great games, but I don't know if I've ever attended anything like what you saw in Minneapolis last weekend. And I liked even the story that you posted about when you arrived and the conversation that you had with your Lyft driver. And so if you wouldn't mind, would you start there and just tell us what your experience was like as a football fan, just to be there covering that game to see what you saw?
I mean, I think that even when waking up that morning, I was just in a good mood. I love divisional weekend so much. You know, Minneapolis is a great city. Just even the feel around the town right now is so cool. And on the way to the game, Minneapolis in general has a lot of African immigrants. It's just a city that just has a lot of diversity, a lot of people from Ethiopia, Kenya. And my Lyft driver was from Ethiopia, and we were just kind of chatting, and he asked me if I was going to the game, and I said yes. We just were talking about it, and it was funny because, you know, he'd been here for 10 years, but it was so clear that had been enough time for him to develop the same neuroses that every single Vikings fan has. And he just says, God, I hope it doesn't come down to a kick. It was just amazing. And just like this kind of shared dread that entire place has in unison, which, you know, certainly played into their response on Monday night on Sunday night. And as I was getting out of the cab, he just said, you know, enjoy the game. You know, I'm sure it will be a very unique experience. And I was just kind of sitting there like, yeah, like every time I do this, it is. I love this stuff. And the fact that it turned into the game it did, I mean, that only made that moment, that point, even more poignant than it was.
Well, take me to the moment. I mean, can you even put into words what the stadium was like?
It was, you could just kind of feel the pall that had kind of crept over again. You know, that fan base, again, is just so used to heartbreak, and it had gotten quiet, and, you know, the fact that the first two passes, it didn't even look like they were close to being complete, and it kind of seemed like the hope had drifted out of the entire place. And, you know, you see it unfold, and it happens so fast, it's kind of hard to understand even what I was thinking at each individual segment of the play. You know, when he catches the ball, and then the missed tackle, I mean, it happens in half a second. And all before I know it, he's running down the sideline. And the plates literally exploded. I mean, that building rocks. And for that, it's just in unison kind of come together in what felt like a cannon shot of noise. It was unbelievable. I mean, it was literally unbelievable. I mean, I've never seen a locker room with that level of incredulity in a good way. You know, I was in Green Bay. I was in Seattle when Green Bay blew that second half lead in the NFC Championship game against the Seahawks. And just the sadness in that place, I think they had trouble processing everything. But I've never seen a team have that much trouble processing the good. You know, how just how unfathomable it was half an hour ago for them to be going to the Super Bowl, and now they are. I mean, just the head shakes and the oh my gods and the, you know, people streaming things on Instagram talking about how they can't believe it. Like, we don't even know what just happened. Yeah, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was one of the coolest things I've ever gotten to experience in this job.
You know, I think I've spent at least a couple of hours at various times this week just watching on Twitter and YouTube the different fan reactions from people across the nation, Minnesota fans, and what they did. Because I can't get enough of that. I love that. But, but just to see, and it reminds me, hopefully, of what Chiefs fans will be like when they finally do something, you know, in the playoffs for the first time since, really since Super Bowl IV, let's be honest. So I can identify with that longing to see your team not lose in heartbreaking fashion and to be on the right side of some miraculous play. I mean, I'm sure that it was like that when you were walking around after the game. I mean, Minneapolis, everyone had to be floating that whole night, right?
I didn't stay so much time downtown. I wrote directly after the game, and it was a Sunday night. So where I was, the bars had kind of cleared out. I went and just had a quick beer to kind of unwind. And then when I went down a little closer to my hotel to find, get like a final meal, I was sitting there, and there were only a few people around. One of them was very funny. I haven't told anyone else this yet. I was sitting there eating, just kind of watching TV, watching the replays, everything else, having a beer. And I didn't see the guy sit down next to me, and he had his back turned to me the whole time. He was getting a to-go order. He was talking to the staff a little bit whenever, and he pulled up a replay on his phone, was showing them. They were talking about it. And it was Carl Anthony Towns, which I had no idea in the moment because he had his hood up, and I just couldn't see him. And he said that they were watching the game in the locker room right before they played, because they played that night. And he said that we came out totally flat. We were totally distracted because we were so shook, like, from what just happened. That's what he was telling the bar staff. I haven't told anyone else that, which is a pretty funny story that I did not mention because I just totally forgot.
That's awesome.
Wow.
I mean, everybody. I mean, everyone was just anyone. If you had any ties to Minnesota at all, you were...
Or any shred of humanity.
Right.
I mean, there was no way to not kind of be pulled into that moment.
All right, so now you're in Philly, and you're going to watch a quarterback matchup of Case Keenum and Nick Foles. And then in the other game, it's Tom Brady versus Blake Bortles. Last year, the Final Four, all led by superstar quarterbacks. This year, it's Tom Brady and those other three that I mentioned. What do you take away from that, if anything?
I feel like there's not a ton to take away in terms of it being a trend. I think that threading that needle is very difficult. And the luck and kind of good fortune you have to have piles up over time. It's really hard to find all of those things in the same season. There are factors in my mind that allow teams to build a better roster overall than they might have in years past. I mean, if you think about how the cap has grown, there's a lot more chances to go out and get free agents like a Calais Campbell and an AJ Boye. Players that are rookies are getting shots that they just wouldn't have gotten otherwise. You know, I mean, so many first-round, second-round draft picks are playing that you kind of remake your team on the fly. I wrote about that a bit earlier this year. And it kind of feels like they were of the facelift contender in a way. And Philly did the same thing. I mean, the amount of moves they made to fill out the margins of their roster was just so shrewd and so smart. You know, you're going to make all those trades, Jernigan, Darby. You go get Ajayi, signing Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, they made so many moves that really put themselves in this position. And doing that in a single offseason is very hard. It doesn't happen that often. And I just think that for the most part, we're not going to see it happen again anytime soon. I think this is going to be an aberration compared to what we're used to. And also, you have to consider how lucky teams like Jacksonville and Minnesota were health-wise. You know, obviously, Bradford and Cook go down for the Vikings. But their entire defense, they missed a combined 3 starts from their 11 starters. In Jacksonville, it was 2. So, again, getting to this point with your roster when you don't have a quarterback requires just a domino effect of really good fortune, and it just seems like these teams all got it this year.
Okay, there's that phrase, when you don't have a quarterback, the talking point for a lot of people is there's Tom Brady and then 3 guys that nobody wanted. Let's start with Case Keenum, though. Has he proven that people should have wanted him? I mean, is how good is he?
I think Case Keenum is very good in the Vikings offense, playing with the Vikings skill position players. Like, that's what I'm comfortable saying. And quarterback is such a circumstance-dependent position. And you get a guy who comes in to a system with 2 receivers that just make plays happen. I mean, look no further than what Diggs did on the touchdown, but you don't even need to do that. I mean, there are 3 or 4 catches in that game where Diggs is going outside of his frame, where Thielen's going up. The drive where they scored that, where they kicked that field goal to go ahead. I mean, the catch Thielen made on the sideline when he got interfered by Marshon Lattimore is just insane. And they do that all the time. So with those receivers, you just need a quarterback who's able to understand where to put his guys in advantageous 50-50 spots? Are you willing to let it rip when those situations present themselves? And Keenum is that guy. He's not afraid to do that, and he's given his guys enough shots. The other thing about Keenum that I think kind of transcends scheme that has made him really good this year is I don't know if any other quarterback in the league has been better at positively avoiding pressure. The Vikings had one of the five or six highest pressure rates in the league, I believe, and Keenum had the second lowest sack rate when pressured in the NFL. Only Phillip Rivers was better. He does such an excellent job of extending plays, keeping bad plays away, that I think that would translate to a lot of different systems. But for the most part, what we've seen from him as a quarterback is dependent on the guys around him, and that's not a knock on him because that's true for most quarterbacks. I mean, there are only three or four transcendent passers in the league that you could just drop them in and you'd say, all right, go at it. I mean, Matt Ryan wasn't that good this year because Kyle Shanahan wasn't there. It's okay to say that, and I think that's where Case Keenum is.
And you are in Philadelphia to cover that game for The Ringer. Robert Mays is our guest. And so who's going to win the NFC Championship?
I think the Vikings are. I just think that Minnesota has a better roster top to bottom. That defense is, it's nasty, man. I wrote about it this week, and they just have such a defined understanding of everything they want to do. And we talked about all the turnover with those other teams. The reason the Vikings are good is because there was no turnover. I mean, they have a ton of talent, but you also have every starter that spent at least 3 years with Zimmer and over half of them that have been there the entire time. What they can do with all the complicated stuff and the blitzing and the coverages and the disguising, it's a real challenge for any quarterback. And it's essentially the polar opposite of what Nick Foles saw last week. I mean, he saw a defense that's fairly simplistic, that tackles well, that's athletic. This is not that. I mean, this is a master's degree in football, and I just think that they're going to be too much for him.
You know, I was looking at the way you mentioned the consistency of this defense and the way that it was compiled. I think it was the 2015 draft class, which their first, second, and third round picks, Trey Waynes being a first round pick at corner, Daniel Hunter being a third round pick. They have three draft picks starting on that defense from that one draft class. It's like it seems like you have to have a class like that if you're going to build your own unit. I mean, that's got to be one of the more impressive drafts of 2015 for anybody, right?
Kendricks is probably the third one, right?
Yeah.
So Kendricks is the second round. So you have three guys that you can plug and play. And it's been a long road for Waynes. I mean, he's had some struggles. But, yes, I mean, that's a monster draft. But they've done outside of that. The fact is, I think the Vikings had the highest percentage of their yardage from fifth-round picks or later on offense. And the reason that is possible is because you've hit about 10 home runs on your defense early in the draft.
Yeah.
Harrison Smith's a first-round pick. Anthony Barr is a first-round pick. Xavier Rhodes is a first-round pick. When you do that, that gives you the opportunity to really get something going. And the same is true in Jacksonville, in a way. You know, we talk about Boye and Campbell, and of course, like, they've been excellent for that team. But then look at what their in-house guys have managed to do. Ramsey, Yannick Ngakoue in the third round, Telvin Smith in the fifth. You need to do that on top of being able to sign these free agents because eventually the money runs out. You're going to need a couple players still on rookie contracts, and that's what really good teams do.
I mean, Rick Spielman's had nine picks in the top 100 that he spent on defense since 2012, and seven of those guys are starters. And Sharif Floyd would be a starter if he wasn't hurt. That would be eight. So he's hit on every one of them, really, except for one. That's unbelievable. All right, before we run out of time, who will win the AFC Championship game?
I think it's the Patriots. I wrote about this today on The Ringer, just really nerding out hard on the passing game of New England against the pass defense of the Jags. Jacksonville really struggled this year relatively when teams threw out of heavy personnel packages. So, you know, two running backs, two tight ends, that kind of stuff. And that's what the Patriots love to do. No one lined up in 21 personnel, which is a fullback and two wide receivers, more often than New England this year. And they throw about half the time. It's a tenet of who they are. It's part of their identity. We're going to get your base package on the field without your sub pass rushers, and we're going to sling it around on you. And it just so happens that lines up with the Jags' biggest weakness. So I just think that that's going to be too much, and I don't know if Bortles is going to have enough. This Jags team is like a chainsaw. I mean, if you drop them into any situation, it can be problematic. But I just think that the matchups are too much in New England's favor.
We appreciate your time, man. Enjoy covering that game in Philadelphia. Cheesesteak or no? When you're in Philly, do you have to get a cheesesteak, or have you already?
I'll do one. I've been kind of attached to the hotel because I don't know what day it is, and I've written like 17 times this week.
Right.
But now that I'm done for the week, I will probably venture out today or tomorrow and go grab one.
So is there a specific place you go? I mean, our producer goes
no,
to
I just kind of go to all Jakey. Of them just so I can try the different ones. I don't have a loyalty. I haven't been here enough times, so I'm still trying to pick them off. It's like how I've tried to hit all the Juicy Lucy places in Minnesota. You know, it's you try the local cuisine, you want to find the best one. You don't want to just take somebody's word for it, hammer it over and over.
Right.
Have you had a tasty cake?
No, I've not.
Yeah, tasty cakes are a Philly tradition as well.
Oh, I'll have to do that. Try one of those. Sounds great. I like cake and I like tasty things.
There you go. If you're going cheesesteak, my favorite in Philly is Tony Luke's.
That's exactly.
Okay, that's good to know.
Amen,
I've
brother.
I've been there, so maybe I'll hit that up tonight.
I think I've tried every single place there, all of them. And Tony Luke's is my favorite.
I will take your word for it here. That sounds great. And that'll be either my lunch tomorrow or my dinner tonight.
And if it's no good, I want you to crush Jake on Twitter or something.
I'd appreciate
that.
Oh,
that sounds great. Yeah, I
got a text message from a buddy of mine from Philly just now. Said Tony Luke's as well.
There it is. Hey, so, Robert.
Don't punch any horses while you're there, okay?
No, that's
terrible. I cannot make any promises.
Well,
don't talk to horses, man.
That is awful.
We got your bail.
Robert, thank you for the time, man.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Tony Luke's. Why? Jake, you said that with conviction. Why, Tony Luke's? You've sampled all of them. What makes that special?
I think it's the bread cheese combo. Like it has to be the right bread and it has to be the right cheese.
You gotta get the right bread.
Well, I mean, they do the cheese whiz. I've had several of Tony Luke's.
And what about that bread? Do you like so much?
It's not messy. Stuff doesn't fall out. It kind of like...
You need bread to hold that whole thing together.
Yeah, it kind of encapsulates
sturdy
it
bread.
And
That's
keeps it...
Right.
It's almost like a good lobster roll. The lobster all stays in the roll.
I'd love to have a lobster roll right now.
Right. Lobsters. I'm just saying, like, for me, it's if you can keep it all compact.
What about balloons?
Balloons
and lobsters.
And balloons.
I slapped it right off the table. Did you know that?
So stupid.
I slapped that right off the table.
Slap balloons.
Balloons. Touch and lick balloons. Either you get it or you don't. If you do, thumbs up. Yep. If you don't, we're sorry. Stupid. Is there any place in Kansas City to get a really fantastic cheesesteak?
Well, I mean, Chartreuse Caboose is pretty darn good.
Grinders has a good one. A really good one.
Yeah, Grinders is good.
They got a good Philly.
Chartreuse Caboose right down the corner.
Chartreuse is good.
Lobster roll.
Lobsters? I don't know where to get the best lobster.
I'm just trying to throw things out there because they're smart people, way smarter than us, listening to this show.
I will say this.
What's the best lobster roll in KC?
I think Robert Mays makes a smart point when he says he'll have one cheesesteak because it wasn't the last time I was in Philly, but when I was in Philly when Sporting won the U.S. Open Cup, I made the mistake of having a second Philly cheesesteak at about 3 o'clock in the morning.
I feel like if you have celebrating three bites of something, then you're wrecked.
Yeah, I know. And I had a full cheesesteak before the game. Then Sporting won, so we went out celebrating all night. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, I had another cheesesteak, which seemed like a good idea. And then, I mean, I was paying for that the entire day.
I think one per day was always my limit.
Yeah, that should be your limit.
So I'd be there for 3 days. I'd try 3 different places.
Yeah, those things are huge, too. I mean,
thanks.
Yeah. Thank you.
No cheesesteak, but Jake, he said he's got some chorizo for you later on. If
Hey, Frank's Pickle Barrel asks, can I slip you a pickle?
We have some of that back after this on WHB.